Okay, we'll start on the Mishnah on the Daf Amud Aleph. Mishnah says, Matzah igrot shum vigrot mazon. So if he finds igrot shum is a document where Beis Din has assessed the value of the debtor's property on behalf of the creditor. Right? Igrot mazon are indication where the person had indicated that he will support his daughter, stepdaughter. He will give mizonot to his stepdaughter. That's an igrot that indicates that fact. Shtare chalitza umiyunin. Right? Shtarot from Beis Din that indicate a woman that had performed chalitza. Or miyun, a ktana, who was married off by her mother or brother after her father passed away, which is only kiddushin midrabanan. It was kiddushin midrabanan. When she's a ktana, she can reject through miyun. She does miyun, she just, in front of Beis Din says that, or in front of three, she says that she doesn't want to be married to him anymore. And then they are divorced, but they just need a document of evidence to that effect from Beis Din.
Not divorced, it's like annulled.
Right, annulled, basically, right, very good. Shtari Berurim, which we'll explain, the Gemara will explain what that is. V'chol ma'aseh Beis Din, this is what we've been quoting earlier, V'chol ma'aseh Beis Din, arizeh yachzir. Anything that, any document of Beis Din, you give back. The underlying assumption over here, and that's what Rashi points out, is that the lekel meichas lanimlach, we don't have to worry about the fact that maybe the document was written and then not given, because Beis Din only writes documents of evidence, or evidentiary documents. It doesn't write documents on speculation that somebody might do something. They write a document as evidence that something has happened. Or their mikayei mashtar, and once they do, when the Beis Din already is active or doing something, then it's a matter of fact. It's already happened. Not a matter of, you know, question whether it will happen, not happen, or somebody has to take an action, but rather it's done already. If that's the case, we don't worry about nimach, about changing his mind, about writing a document and changing his mind. Number two, we don't worry about piron in all these cases, because the documents that we brought here have nothing to do with piron. They have to do with payment. So the underlying assumption is that these documents are still in force or intact, and therefore you can return them to their owners. Matza'a b'chafisa o gluskema. Person finds a shtar by in a chafisa or gluskema, which tomorrow will define what they are. Tachrishel shtarot o agudashel shtarot. Either a wrap of shtarot, again the Gemara will discuss that, or a guda, or a group, or a tied up bundle of shtarot. Isaiah yachzir, you give them back. Bekama guda shel shtarot, how many are found in a guda shtarot? Shlosha, kshirim zeh bezeh, three that are all tied together, three of them tied together. Shimon omer, echad alove mishlosha, if a person finds three documents, right, that all indicate the same borrower, same debtor, but three different creditors, yachzir the loveh. Then he should give it back to the loveh, because why else would three documents in the same debtor be together unless they were in the possession of the debtor? Right? Shlosha lavin amina echad. On the other hand, if there are one creditor with three different borrowers put together, they were all together, yachzir the loveh. Again, you return it to the creditor, because why else would there be three documents then with three different people that are all together in one shot, and the only common denominator between them is the creditor. Matzah shtar ben shtarutav. Person finds the shtar amongst the shtarot. Ve'enu de'amati bo. He doesn't know whether it was paid, not paid. It's like a creditor. Doesn't know if it was paid off or not. Yehei munacha tshuvo Eliyahu. Then you don't make a claim with it. We wait till Eliyahu Navi comes to clarify the situation. Im yeshi mehen simponot. If with them, together with these documents, is a simpon, Yatseh mashav simponot. Then you do whatever is found inside of the simpon. Now, simpon is a shovar, the equivalent of some sort of document indicating what has happened to the shtar or what's changed with the shtar. Some sort of indication, receipt of sorts. We'll see that again. We'll see that more later in the daf today. Now, mash shtari birurin. What is a shtar birur? So, help the targumu shtari tanato. Right, we had the one explanation, which is that they were shtari tanato, which is the claims of the Balei Dinim. Right, that's what a shtari birurim is. Rabbi Yirmiyama, zir bor lo echad, v'zir bor lo echad. Rather, this is the document about zavla. Zavla is where we agree to put together a case, and we want to pick the judges who are going to be the judges for the case. So we use a process called zavla, which is you pick one judge, I pick one judge, and those two judges will pick a third judge. So So this Shtar Birim is a document indicating your preference for which judge that you had chosen. What was the, who was the judge that you had chosen? And that, we write it down, and it's signed by Beis Din, so we're signed on it, so we can't, you can't reverse your position once you've accepted that judge. Right now, B'chol Maseh Beis Din Harei Yachzeh Yachzir. So every Maseh Beis Din you give back. So here's the case that we saw right on Yud Chet. We saw this 2 days ago. How Gita Dishtakach Beis Din Rav Huna. It was a get that was found in the Beis Din Rav Huna. Davakitiv Beis B'Shurei Mata Darakis Naro. That in the city, right, of Shurei Mata, the Avrak Yisnara, it was on the banks of the river. Amar Rav Huna, it's amazing here how they, I don't know how they did this when they laid out the Gemara, but this parses, the Gemara parses exactly the same way it did on Yud Chet. The last line, two, three words are Amar Rav Huna, and then it turns, the top of the page is Chayshin on the Shnei Shiuri. We worry about the fact that there are two cities of Shiuri. So now, first of all, what's the case over here? Rashi over here says the case. I didn't mention this on Yitzchad, but the evidence of Machulas Rashi and Tosos is exactly what the case is. Rashi over here says it, that by Shliach Mevio, Omer Mimenu Nafal. That the case over here is that a Shliach is bringing a get on behalf of the husband to give to the woman, and he dropped the get, or he lost the get on the way, and now he's coming to the Beis Din to claim the get. They have it in Beis Din Rav Huna, and he wants the get back, so he continue on his Shlichut, on his mission to give the get to the woman. That's the way Rashi describes it. Tosus, on the other hand, on Yuchet Amud Bet, rejects that explanation that it involves a shliach. So he says, Ak, Mashapira Shinafam and a shliach Hashem. Why does Rashi say that it has dropped from a shliach? Why, Dim Kain, Ma Mo'il Henpek. Right? What does it matter whether there's a henpek on this document or not? Kain Shalo Badi Yadisha Dain. Didn't come to the hands of the woman. I mean, a henpek is only valuable once the woman has gotten the get. And then Beis Din has validated the document that it's a good get. Right? Beis Din's not going to validate the get while it's still in the hands of the husband on the way to the woman because there was no divorce that was done yet. Who's Mekayim Ishtar get? Not the husband. The wife who's Mekayim Ishtar get. So she would only be Mekayim Ishtar once she had it in her possession. Tosus rejects it for that reason, that it doesn't make so much sense that you have a handbag or there's going to be a master Beis Din to be validating this document if the document hasn't reached the woman yet.
So what's his case?
So Yesh Lomar, Tosa says, the Ikhtib Bei Hempek, if it's validated, then my Rish Nafal Min Eisha, that it fell from the woman herself. The woman herself dropped the document, and that's the reason that it's found here. And if it's a Shliach, he says it can't, has to be a case where there's no Hempek. The Shliach is bringing it, it can't be a case of Hempek, because then there would be no validation of the get, and the get can't be a case where it was validated. So similar to our Gemara, on Yud Chet, the Gemara continues here, Amalei Rav Chisda the Rabbah, Pogayim. He says, go out and check into this din that Rav Huna says that we're Chayshin and the Shnei Shiuri. Worry about the fact that there might be two cities. Even though we do not know that there are two people with the same name on this get, we worry about the fact that maybe there's another city with the person with that same name. Do the Urta Bailo Rav Huna Minach, because Rav Huna is going to come to you and ask you a question in the evening. Nopak Takwe Ashkak, he went out and found our Mishnah. It's not. Ko Maseh Beis Din or Izeh Yachzir. Right? Anything that is a Maseh Beis Din, then you return it. So why is it a Maseh Beis Din over here? The only way it could be a Maseh Beis Din is if there's a henpek in this get. That's why Tosfos was insane that there's a henpek in the get means that it must have fallen from the Isha and not fallen from a Shliach. So now, Amalei Rav Amram the Rabbah. Rav Amram says to Rabbah, what do you mean you're bringing this Mishnah? How are you trying to conclude a case of Isur from Mamon? Our Mishnah discusses documents that are dealing with creditors, and other loan documents. How are you taking loan documents and then trying to prove something about a get, which is Isur? Yeah, the two, right, the two don't make sense together. Tosfos challenges this underlying assumption, which is a very interesting Tosfos, and top Tosfos over here. He says, Im Tomar, Tvei, Anan Machmirin Bimona. We're actually more Machmir when it comes to Mamon than versus Isura. So why is that? Daha Inan Ochol Chimba Mamon Acharov. When it comes to Mamon, we're in Ochim Acharov by Mamon. But yet, the Isura, when it comes to Isur, Adlina Bataruba, we do go after the robe. Afila Hefatika Chazaka the Isura can negate a robe. Even if though there's a Chazaka of Isur negate the robe, we go with the robe. Lochashinan, Shema Bemakum Nekab Koshochit. Well, we don't think that possibly when he shechted the animal, for instance, a person comes to shecht the animal, how do we know that there was no Nekab in the Veshet? Right, that would make it a pasul, a trefa, animal. How come we don't say that when the person checks, all of a sudden he went right through that specific hole that was there? Because we say, even though that we have an Isur trade for your an Isur Nevela, possibly, that the animal is alive or Isur even Echai, yet we still say that Shechita is a good Shechita. So we are hoping that Acharol by Isura, and not by. Says, V'yesh Lomar, it says, Mikoma Kobe Ish Ish Hechmiru. When it comes to Arayot, there we are Machmir. Why? To my chain themself, Lotina Selechatchila, Afal Pish Ruba Meitim. In a case where you cannot see, right, there's a case where there's waters that surround an individual. A woman fell into the water, a husband fell into the water, right? And somebody, a witness saw him fall into the water, but he cannot see all the coastlines around him. It's water that has no, right, no visible coastline. And therefore he cannot say with certainty that the husband didn't come up somewhere. Because he can't see that. If he could see the whole coastline around, he can say that the husband never came up, he clearly drowned. But we have a did by Mind Chain himself that you can't make that statement because he has no idea where the husband came up. Even though, a la robe, somebody in a position where their ma'iv is in themselves is going to die. Despite that fact, we say no, that the woman, the chatkila, shouldn't get married based on that. And therefore, we don't go after a robe, even by Yisura here. Even though normally by Yisura we do, by Yishudish we don't. But Yod Yesh Lomar is a very important line in Tosfos. The Mida Oraita Lo Cheshinan L'Shnei Yosef in Shimon. This whole concept that we worry about the fact that when a get is dropped that there are possibly two people with the same name, that whole chashash is min Torah, it doesn't exist. Aval midrabonon chashina mishum laz. Why do we worry about it? We worry about it because of laz, not because of psul get over here. We worry about it that people say it was a psul get because maybe there's another in Shimon, and it's an invalid get. This woman was really not divorced. Ube mona lo shayach laz. If that's the case, by mamon, right, there is no din of laz. The kach parach shapir. That's why he asked this question. Echi poshit mari sumi mimona. How could you learn out Isur from Mamon? The whole problem by Get, there's an additional dimension by Get that doesn't exist by Mamon. So just because by Mamon you give it back, doesn't mean by Get that you'll give it back. Why? Because there's this additional level of Shash, that's a level Dirabonon, that we worry about Laz by Gitin. And because of that, maybe the Din by Gitin will be different than the Din by Mamon. So Tosu gives two answers as to why, even though Isura, right, is more Kal than Mamon, we should be able to learn. Right, we should be able to learn from Isura from Mamo. Right, so why not? So he gives one answer is that Ishidish is a unique case, and Ishidish were machmir by Ishidish, and therefore we can't learn. Number two is that the problem here by Isura is a din de rabbonon, that is an added level of chash here specific to Gitin of Laz, and therefore again it's unique to Gitin, and therefore you can't learn out from. Basically, the common denominator of shtarot of mamon.
Now, when we say yachzir zibal shtar, in this case, who's the bal shtar?
Well, it depends. According to Rashi, it is the shliach is the bal shtar here. We return to the shliach. According to Tosfos, we're returning it to the woman. I mean, that is it, that's the machlokas about who lost the shtar, right? So Amalei, so he said back to him, Tarda. This is what Rabba says to Ramamram. Tarda. Rashi over here interprets Tarda to be mishumam. Right, you crazy guy. Right, Rashi in Baba Kamo says that Tarda is ain't late, you have no heart. Tarda, so he said then beat head, something to that effect. Put it that way, it was no compliment to him.
You have to assume they did, Rabbi Amram raised.
Alright, the ire of Rabbi over here.
No, good beats.
So he is, the Gemara in Baba Kama is actually, the Gemara in Baba Kama says it was Rabba who was speaking to Rabbi Amram and said this, but then there's a gear change on the side. It says Rabba, obviously for this reason, because Rabba had spoken like this to Rabbi Amram before. It sounds like they had a ongoing altercation or relationship, right? So, Shtari Chalitza Umiyun in Tanan. Our mission does not just include cases of Mamon. It also includes Chalitza and Miyun. So what do you mean, Misura mi Mamona? Cases in the mission are also Misura. What are you saying? Tanan. Sapoko Arza de Beirav. All of a sudden, one of the pillars of the base medrash toppled over. So, Marar Marar Mishum Latai de Dipoko. Marar Marar Mishum Latai de Dipoko. Each one of them said it was because of my kavod that it fell over. Right? Rabba says it was my kavod that the thing that it fell over, the pillar fell over, because you tried to embarrass me in front of the base medrash and ask me a question on my proof from the Mishnah. And Rav Amram says that it was fell over on my kavod because you called me a name. Afterwards, you were denigrated me, and because you denigrated me, it fell over. So each one of them said that the reason that the pillar of the base medrash had toppled over was in honor their kavod, to protect their honor. That's why it fell over. And now, where it says that the Mishnah says matzah b'chafisa or b'tulus kuma, he found it either in a chafisa or a tulus kuma. My chafisa. What are these objects that you find in shtarim? So Amar Rabbi Barchana chemat ktana. It seems it's a small flask of sorts, right? A small flask, a small pitcher, a sort that this is a chafisa. My tulus kuma. What's a tulus kuma? Amar Rabbi Barshmol tzlika desabi. It's the old man's basket. Why? The old man's basket where they put their things so they won't forget where they put their stuff. Right? So since they get forgetful, they put all their things into one place, and that's what it's called. So the question about that is exactly, why is this helpful? If you find a shtar in these chafisa, or in these, right, these tlika, the sabai, why does that help you in terms of identifying that these are the shtarot? I mean, if everybody puts their shtarot into these places, then why is that a siman? Right? And if not, right, if not everybody puts them in, then what's this idea that's a tlika desabe, that the place where old men put all their stuff? So, again, Rashi explains that chemat is shal or shnotim bo yayin. Chemat is a flask, a wine flask, right, where made out of leather, where you put the shtar. Tlita desabe, taska shaskini matzim ba tlita shmishan. The stuff shloi tzarchul chafesa frem. They don't have to go look for them. On the other hand, Tosfos says over here, says it can't be just that that's the case. Otherwise, if you look towards the bottom, Tosfos says, Veishlo demayri hacha, shenotem beluska atzma siman she'enu muvhak. That the case here is not simply that he says, I found the shtar, right, in a tuskuma. I mean, that my shtar was in a tuskuma, now you found a tuskuma with the shtar. Because what evidence is that? That you left anything? Everybody puts their stuff into a tuskuma. What evidence is that? So he says he must be that he has a siman, she'enu muvhak, on the tuskuma. Below chayshinan l'sheila, and we don't worry about the fact that he borrowed this from someone else. Right? The shemi shilo achavotan el shos. Dachi tikun rabbanon. This is the way the rabbanon are metakein, that we're not chayish that he borrowed the kli from someone else, from another party. Rather, this is his kli. Just like they have people return a Naveda with any Mubak, even though Simanim are not Doraisa, we say that you can return a Naveda with a Siman Chain Mubak. So the same thing over here. The Rabbanan allows you to use a Siman Chain Mubak on this, you know, basket that belongs to the Zakenim as an identification method for this Tuskuma. So it's, again, it's not the way Rashi looks at it, or it seems from Rashi, Rashi doesn't indicate otherwise. That you simply have this basket, you come to court and say, I lost the shtar, I lost the get in a basket. Or I lost the shtar in a basket. So somebody says, oh wow, you know, he goes, identify, he goes, yeah, or identify the shtar, he says the shtar in a basket. So the guy says, oh great, no, I found the shtar in a basket also. So he says, that doesn't seem to be enough. Why is just saying that the shtar is in a basket an identification? So he says, no, must be that the luskma adds a dimension of identification. How does it add a dimension of identification? If there's a siman chain of muhat on the luskma. He says that would be the factor that makes or gives you the ability to collect the shtar. And I'll ask, what's the chiddush then? If you can give a siman to the tuskuma, what's the chiddush? The chiddush is, right, we don't worry about, right, number one, saying to move hops, it's going to be the rabbanan, but number two is we don't worry about the fact that he borrowed the kli. If the kli is a borrowed kli. Someone else borrowed the kli, and it's not his shtar anymore. We don't worry that, oh, so that siman, you know the kli because it was your kli. So it's not your shtar because you lent it out to this individual. So that would be an
outpost. Yeah, but assuming the Rashi does not require, you know, this, even a sandwich and a mubar, you know, just the fact that it's in a gluskum or whatever is enough. Maybe the assumption is that although this is a common place for people to keep their documents that are transitory, you know, documents that haven't yet been delivered are not likely to be put in there. You know, a document that you have to give to somebody, so.
I mean, Rashi the Shita told her, we're talking about a shliach here, that's bringing the get. Interesting idea. Right now, the Gemara deals with what about agudot and kruchot that we saw in the Mishnah, Darabana. Kamu tachrich shel starot. What is a tachrich shel starot? Shosha kruchim ze bezeh. Three of them are wrapped up together. So that's what the Balaim say. When the Balaim say that they want to identify these starot, they say that three of them were wrapped up together. Kamu agudah shel starot. How much is a group of starot that are tied together? Shloshak shirim zebazet. Three that are tied one to another. So that's the siman that he gives. When he goes to look for the shtarot, he says, I had three shtarot that were wrapped together. Or he says, I had three shtarot that were tied together. Say here, shmamino kesher simon. Let us say from here that a knot is a siman. So over here, what's the siman that he gives? He gives that it was knotted together. The three of them were knotted together. So it's the kesher that gave the siman. Ha tani Reb Chiya. Didn't Reb Chiya learn shlosha kuchim zebazeh? So he says, Reb Chiya learned that no, it wasn't a case of three that were tied together with the kesher, but again, it was three that were wrapped together. It says, we had a case already of kuchin. What do you mean that Reb Chiya says that this next case of a gudot also means kuchin? Says, well, that depends. The takwe kochad the birosha de chavrei. When we talk about takwe kuchin, that is when they are wrapped up together. The head of each one of them is wrapped over each other. Aguda deramu hadadi puchot. So it seems to me that when you talk about three of them wrapped together, there are different ways to wrap them together. One way is to lay them all out, three of them, three pages right here, and then you wrap up the three pages together. That is aguda. Shel shtarot according to Reb Chiya. Kuchin is a case where you have the shtar, the top and the bottom. It sounds to be like the heads are either wrapped together or they're one on top of another. Somehow that they are just together, you know, pushed together somehow at the end, but not that they're physically wrapped in one shot. Not three of them laid together. Right, exactly. That would be the case of agudot, which is where they're all wrapped together. Kuchot would be the case where they're somehow wrapped, but not totally wrapped, enwrapped with each other. I mean, they're not put on one on top of the other. All right, so now, the Gemara says, my machus, the guy who finds these documents, what does he announce? So, minyan, he announces that he found how many shtarot he found. So, Gemara says, my iria tlata filutrei nami. If he's going to announce the number, why does it have to be three instead of two? You know, what's better about three than two? Over here, Afilu Trei Nami, you could say, now I found two shtarot. The guy comes and says they were wrapped one on top of each other. They were wrapped head to, you know, I mean, the two heads were together. Ela Kadama Ravina, Tabo Machus. Over here, by there, he announces the Tabo, the coin, or the object that he found. Akanami Shtari Machus. Over here also, he announces the shtar, that he found the shtar, that he found shtarot. So now, what's the difference? So why is two better than three, or three better than two? Because if he announces, I found shtarot, what is the minimum number of shtarot that he found? Two. So if a guy comes and says, I had two together, he hasn't said anything. That's a poll you'll say from the fact that he announced, I found shtarot. So the only way that his statement will become significant is if he says, you have three shtarot. So the guy announces, I found some shtarot. And a guy comes up and says, I had three shtarot, plus they were wrapped together, their heads were together. So that's enough of a siman that those were his shtarot. But if he comes in and says there were two shtarot, of course there were two shtarot there. Because he announced there were shtarot. The minimum number of shtarot is two, and two will not be a siman in any way. The number is part of the siman. Right, that they were kuchin, because it might be that that's also somewhat of a normal way to keep, right. So he has to keep the shtarot. So the fact that he has to get both, he gets the number, which is three, plus he says how they were positioned, that's evidence enough that he can get the shtarot back.
Maybe it was three. The chances of it being any one of the pluralities that exist in nature is equal. I mean, it's not going to be a billion shtarot, but it could be between 2 and 50, 2 and 75, 2 and 100. So right. The only problem with it, that it seems to be that he already pre-announced, he gave away that it was two.
Right, the minimum is that.
So then he says, I found, you know, bills, or I found coins, or I found contracts. There's no assumption, you know, that type of chraza, that if someone says, you know, two, that's any less of a liar than if someone says
it was given away.
Right, I mean, but I understand the question. I understand that what Yossi and Shaul are asking, which is that, right, two versus three versus four, again, right, he hasn't given away more information about whether it's two. The fact that he gave away that the minimum is two, again, means that that's not a siman anymore. That's the way Rashi writes it. Look at tafka tlatav otrei midi yediyah demiyuch tarot shtayim vein minyan siman. Right, it's not bringing, like you're saying, it's not bringing any new information to the case. So if he's not bringing any new information to the case, that can't be a siman. Right, you have to bring information that the machriz has not given you already. The machriz gave you the information that it's at least two. I understand where the issue, that it's not so clear, but that's why, at least the Gemara felt that once he announced plural, that you weren't gaining anything by saying two at that point. You needed further siman in this instance. So, right, so now the Gemara, basically the conclusion of the Gemara was, the Gemara did not want to go in a direction. The Gemara had kuchin and agudot, right? We had these two items, and the Mishnah says that by kuchin and agudot, you have to have a minimum of three. in order to create a siman. So the Gemara first said, what's kuchim? They're wrapped together, and gudot means tied together. The Gemara did not want to go that way, because then you have a issue about kesha, that knots would become a siman, which is, right, that we could have concluded from here that in general, ksharim, knots would be a siman, and that it's you know, an issue that we have to deal with. We haven't dealt with that yet in the Gemara, but that's an issue. And therefore, since we didn't want to say what the Gemara would do later on, we don't have it from this mission to have a conclusion about whether kesher is a siman or not. We use Rabbi Chiyah's explanation of our Mishnah, which says that everything is kruchim in our Mishnah. Two types of kruchim. Right? Two types of kruchim. One is where they're karuch, one on top, you know, altogether wrapped in a single wrap, versus a case where they are, right, on top of each other. I mean that there's some sort of overlap where they're put in like a poster tube, one on top of the other, in a poster tube, somehow that they are wrapped up, but not
listed on top. And then around that one, you wrap up the second one.
Right.
As opposed to having three sheets of paper, let's say.
And wrapping them into a single wrap.
Okay,
that's fair. Right, you can do it. Whatever there is, there's two different types of kuchim, bozos. Then what was the minimum of three? That the Gemara has to do with the chrozo. The fact that he's makri is that there's more than one shtar. Therefore, it has to be at least three in order to become a siman. Again, that possibility that there's new information here, that you're not telling him information that he already gave you in order to be a siman. If the documents are all from a single debtor, you give it back to the debtor. If you think they belong to the creditors, why do you have three different creditors with all their documents together in one place? It doesn't make any sense. So Mara says, Dilma the Kaminu Azli. Maybe they were going to be Mikhaim the Shtarot. These are the creditors against the single debtor, they're going to be Mikhaim the Shtarot. So it says, the Mikhaim may. Right, so maybe they were going to get them in the kuyam and they fell from the hands of the sofer who was going to do this. So it says, nobody leaves their document with the sofer when it's getting validated. It gets validated and you leave. You don't leave it around. You don't leave it hanging around with the sofer. The sofer's not going to be the one walking around dropping documents that are in the kuyam. So since that's the case, the only reason that these three documents would be common or together is because they all came from the debtor, and therefore we return them to the debtor. Alright, now, Shlosha Shalavu Me'achad Yavzir Lamalta. Again, if they were three documents that all mention this common creditor, then we give them back to the creditor, because otherwise, these Zagadat Vavininu, if they belong to the debtor, it's Mabau Gabi Adadi. Again, what are they doing together? It says, Dimu Mechtavinu Azli. Maybe they were going to be written, right? I mean that the sofer was going to write these documents, because it was for a single creditor, but they were for three different debtors, and he was going to give them to each of the debtors. That's a case where the documents are three different sofrim, the handwriting is three different handwritings, so you can't say that. So I said, the dimo the kumyunhu adle. So maybe they were going to be Mikhaim the Shtar. If they're going to be Mikhaim the Shtar. So where it says, well, even if they're going to be Mikhaim the Shtar, Malva Mikhaim Shtarei, Lova Lo Mikhaim Shtarei. Alright, so if they're going to be Mikhaim the Shtar, that means that the document's already in force. A Lova is not walking and handing his document to the sofer to get Mikhaim the Shtar. He couldn't care less. The borrower, the debtor, never has to go and validate the Shtar. He's the one who owes the money. It's the creditor who needs the validated Shtar. So this creditor who needs the validated Shtar, that means it's already come to the hands of the creditor. And of course, the creditor's document that fell. So either way, it's a creditor's document. Either because it's three of his together, and that makes sense that it's his. Or if you say it's going to be Mikhaim and it fell from the hand of the Shtar, from the sofa, or they fell because they were on the way to the sofa. Either way, that also belongs to the creditor, because the creditor is the only one who will be Mikhaim and Shtar in that instance. Alright, now, it says, Im Yishman Simponot, Yasema Shib Simponot. Alright, so now, if it is Simponot, then you do whatever the Simponot say. Amrav Yomiyav, Av Amrav. Simpon, I would say, mitachat yam malveh, that a simpon that comes from the hands of the malveh, that he had this receipt, even though it's written in his own handwriting, eino elokim sachek upasul. So it's a joke and it's pasul. Lo mi boi kotu biktav yad sofer. I don't have to say this in a case where a sofer wrote it, the ik of the mamer, because you could say, safri tramele. He got a sofer showed up in town, and he couldn't write, so he needed a receipt. He was afraid the debtor would show up and give him the money, and if he didn't have a receipt, the debtor wouldn't give him the money. So a sofer happened to be passing by town, he said, listen, write me the receipt now, because when the debtor shows up, I'll have something ready and I can take the money from him. So he told me that he cut up, and therefore he wrote it. So this simpon was pre-written, and therefore that case, we can definitely say that it wasn't a valid sofer. Now, what are you going to say when he can write it himself? What's the big deal? He'll write it when the debtor shows up. Why does he have to pre-write it? So puzzle, why sover dilma mitrame vati ben shmashot? He's going to come right before Shabbat. He's going to come ben shmashot to pay me. Ugo kaparli. And he's going to pay me. If I don't give him a receipt right away, he's not going to give me the money. Eftovano, I'm going to pre-write it so I have it ready. So when he shows up here, I can hand him the receipt and get my money. As soon as he brings the money, I can take it. So I'm going to be, it might be a tight position. I'll be running out of the house. Some sort of other factor that will make it impossible for me to write the receipt at that point. So I'm going to pre-write the receipt in order to give it to him. So the fact that it's in the hands of the malveh, right, takes away or detracts from the value of this simpon here, because why is it in the hands of the malveh? If it's a receipt, it should be in the hands of the loveh. The fact that it's found in the hands of the malveh says that it's not betokif, right? It's not a valid shover. Why is he holding it? Why does he have it here? So again, we gave reasons for why he would pre-write it. Either if it's a sofer, where the sofer happens to be in town, he took it, the advantage of that, and he pre-wrote it. Or he personally pre-wrote it in case he was found in a predicament where if the debtor comes to pay him, right, that he doesn't have this receipt ready, and the debtor goes away, or he can't give him. So he has a receipt ready, so as soon as the debtor comes and pays him. That's not our Mishnah. What are you going to do with our Mishnah? Mishnah says that the Malva, in Yeshimahem Simponot, Yatzeh Masha Simponot. If you find these Simponot, then we do exactly what the Simponot say. So our Mishnah says that even though it's in the hands of the Malva, the Simpon is a good Simpon. The Damar of Safra, Shenimsa Ben Shtarot Kruin. It was found amongst the ripped up shtarot. So now what does it mean it was found amongst the ripped up shtarot? So Rashi gives two explanations of what it means, ripped up shtarot. So Rashi, it's Rashi in Ben Shtarot Tav Kruim, it's the second line, the end towards the end of the second line in the wide lines in Rashi. V'hu eino karua, and it's not ripped up. So he's found the shtar that he lent with, the shtar is found with other shtarot that are ripped up. The pikach sumchim ala shover, shemakom shtar mochiach ala shover shu emet. So we're sober, we take together the evidence of the fact that there is a receipt, plus that this shtar is found with other ripped up shtarot of the malveh, that the likelihood. Shimlo nifra, you'll obtain a shtar, it's a shtarot kuyim. If it wasn't paid, you wouldn't put it there. Kach shamat, right? Says, that's what I heard. Vali nira. Says, I don't think that's the case. I'll tell you what I think the case is here. Shinimsa shover ben shtarot kuyim. The shover was found, where? Shovar was found, I'm sorry, between, with other ripped up shtarot. Hilkach, ika the meimar, shnit kabalachov. That the chob was paid off as shovar azeh, it's a rechta malveh azeh. He doesn't need it anymore. El loveh. The loveh. But loveh shachach biyazeh, and the loveh forgot it there. The malveh has two paths. He has the, you know, the inbox and the outbox, right? He has the box where he says the shtarot or documents that he needs that are still active, right? And he has a box where he has defunct or non-needed shtarot. So now, that box which has the defunct shtarot, or all the shtarot that are ripped up, in that box is also a shovar. So now, why is that shovar in the discard pile? Why isn't that in the box where it's the active box? Why? Because if he didn't give it to the loveh yet, it should be in the active box, because he needs to give it to the debtor when he shows up to pay him, he needs to give them in the documents, so it should be in his active box. The fact that it's in the discard pile shows you what? That the loveh already paid him the money. The malveh doesn't need this receipt anymore because the loveh already gave him the money. So what's he doing in the discard pile? He doesn't need it. The loveh is the one who needs it. The loveh forgot to take it, so he dumped it in his discard pile. He doesn't need it to get his money back anymore. As far as the malveh is concerned, the case is closed, the transaction, the loan is done because he got his money back. The shovar is meaningless to him. At this point, he puts it into the discard pile. So that's the way Rashi explains it. There are two possibilities, right? He has the one that he was shomea, that he heard. There's the explanation that the shtar, the good enforced shtar, the active shtar is found amongst the shtarot that are defunct. Whereas and then you have a shovar, so the two of those things together, the two pieces of evidence together, make it sound like that shtar was already paid. Rashi says, no, it has nothing to do with the shtar itself, it has to do with the shovar itself. The simpon itself, right, was dumped in the discard pile. That's indicative of the fact that the shovar is not needed. When is the shovar not needed? When the money was already paid back. So that must mean that the shovar is a good shovar. Right. Now, it says, so, the Amar, Rav Safa, Shnimtsu ben Shtarot Kareem, Hachanami, our case is also Shnimtsu ben Shtarot Kareem. Tashma, Nimtsu lechem ben Shtarotav, Shtarosha Yosef ben Shimon Parua. Guy finds amongst his shtarot, amongst his documents of loans, that there is a shovar, there's a receipt there saying that one of the shtarot, Shimon ben Yosef was already paid off, or Yosef ben Shimon was paid off. Shtarot, shnehem kruim. So now this is a guy who has two shtarot. One shtar against two guys who have the same name in the city, Yosef ben Shimon. So Yosef ben Shimon has two Yosef ben Shimon, and he has a shtar out against both of them. Then he has a receipt in his closet that says that one of the shtarot of Yosef ben Shimon is paid off. Over there, he can't collect from either anymore, because he has no idea which one it is paid from. So then, shneim pruim, kedam rav safra. So how are you going to explain this case? Here's a case where there's a shovar, a simpon, and we're saying that the fact that there's a simpon makes it valid. So kedam rav safra, shneim su bin shtarot kruim. We have to say again, that the case here is where it's found amongst the shtarot kruim, akunami, nisu bin shtarot kruim. Right now, tashma, another case. Shvua shlo pikdano. Pikadnu abba. So this is a pikadnu abba. There's a shvua that our father didn't tell us anything about this situation. Ushlo amar la anu abba. And then our father didn't tell us he paid it off already. And we didn't find amongst our father's shtarot that this shtar was already paid. So this is a shvua, right, that the yitomim get to take in order to collect with the shtar that was left for them by their father. So they take this shvua in order to collect. So they say our father didn't tell us anything about it, he didn't give us any command about it, there were no other documents amongst us that said it was paid. But what do you see from that? You see that if he had a document in there saying a receipt saying it was paid, that it would be valid. And we said before that that a simpon has no value. Again, this is where Rav Safra said his original statement, where we keep saying that it belongs everywhere else, also over here. His original statement, Rav Safra says, is found amongst the kruin, amongst the ripped up shtarot. Again, according to Rashi, two possibilities is either that this shtar itself, kruin pile, or, right, that this shovar was found in the kruin pile. That, in that case, that would be, if it was found in that pile, then they would consider it to be paid. Since it's not, since they said we didn't find anything that evidence of that, therefore you owe us the money. That's the shvua that they're taking. Alright, now, tashma. Simpon, sheish la beidim. Right, there's a simpon that has a dim on it, that was signed. Yitkayim bechotamav. Then we will validate it with the signatures. Right? There are signatories to this document. So let's go ask the edim who signed it, what exactly was the shavar written for? So Mara says, if that's the case, right, if we're going to validate it with the signatures, that means that Rashi says, what's the problem over here? It says, I was not paid off. Beteda. She says, I'll prove to you that I was not paid. I never gave you the receipt. The fact that I have receipts is evidence that you never paid it to me. It says, let's go ask the witnesses who signed it. If the Edim say they signed it, then he's not believed anymore. As long as we don't establish that the fact that it was assigned shofar by these Edim, then we don't say the fact. Why? He's believed. Why? The Mal Mafiklei, who's the one who brought the shofar out? The Malveh. So the Peshos or Peshaitir. He's the one who showed us the shofar here. So he can tell us that he never gave it. There was a shofar that he wrote and he never gave over. Once we have alternative evidence that the shofar was in existence, then the Malveh has no claim over here. So if we validate it through the Edim, then the Malveh's claim that it wasn't given already doesn't matter because of Mekayim. Right, then he's believed to say that it was signed, but it was not given yet. Now that's what Rashi says. Rashi says that that the case is here that the Malveh is claiming that it's Loparati with this. Tosas points out over here, which is very interesting. Tosas says, Simpon, Sheshel Avedim, it's came to Nearer the Mashmalei Shubiyah the Malveh. Sounds like Rashi, that it's in the hands of the Malveh. Like Rashi said, the Malveh shows up with the Shovar and gives it here. Medikari late simpon. So it says, how do I know it's in the hands of the Malveh? Because he calls it a simpon. What is a simpon? So Rashi explains to us, what's a simpon? Shovar mevatel shtar. A simpon is a receipt that is mevatel, that negates, alright, or invalidates a shtar. B'chol davar mevatel, anything that makes something invalid, right, davar karui kariv simpon. That's where the word simpon comes. That's why by kedusha isha, what are we worried about by Yerusin? Why do we say by Yerusin, right, that maybe there'll be a mekach ta'ut by Yerusin? Because simpon, maybe we'll find mumim in the woman. So what does it mean, mumim? We'll find things that are wrong with the woman, and that will invalidate the kiddushin. Same thing with an eved, right? Eved, why did we worry about simpon by an eved? We worry about simpon by an eved. If there's a mumim, the eved would invalidate the eved. Why? Because that would be mavata of the transaction. So again, simpon is a term that's used generally for invalidation or mevatel. So now, Tosa says, that's not true. That's not the total term. Simpon is a unique term to the Malveh. He says that when is it called a Simpon? Debiyat Aloveh Kari Le Shovar. When the debtor has the document, it's called the receipt. Right? Lashon Simpon, Lashon Bitul. On the other hand, Simpon, when it's found, is in the hands of the Malveh. And of course, if the Loveh is holding it, if the debtor is holding this document, and they didn't say they wrote the receipt, then what's the question here that it's not a valid document? So of course, it has to be here where the Malveh is holding the document. But those makes an interesting distinction here that whenever the Gemara uses the term simpon, it's referring to the fact that it's a receipt in the hands of a Malveh. And then if it uses a shovar, that's a receipt in the hands of the Loveh.
The shovar is an executed simpon.
Right. Exactly. Alright, so now, what are we going to do with this? This basically says, right, that simpon that has eidim, you can make modav. Ema yitkayem mechotamav. Not that if we find out that the eidim are there, that it's okay, the whole simpon is okay, even though it's in the hands of the malveh, against what we said above. Rather, we say yitkayem mechotamav means what? D'shayin lehu l'sudot sadeh. Not that we say if we find out that the signatures on there are valid signatures, that it's a good shovar, that it's a good receipt. No, we ask the eidim, what, how did you sign the document? When you signed this receipt, did you sign it because the money was already paid? Or do you sign it in advance of the payment on behalf of the Malveh so that he could give it to the Loveh? So that would be the question. Not that we say once we determine that the signatures here are real, that automatically this is a good shovar, that this is a good receipt. But then we have the principle of Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba Marav, which is that when it's in the hands of the Malveh, there are questions about the validity of this shovar, the simpon, which is here in the hands of the Malveh. So how do we overcome that problem? We say, no, we don't ask the Eidim whether they signed it. Who cares if the Eidim signed it? If the Eidim signed it, good. So we know that it's a valid simpon, it's a valid shovar. That doesn't mean it was given to the Loveh. It doesn't mean it was paid off yet. We ask the Eidim, was it paid off when you gave this shovar? Or was it anticipation of the payoff that you signed it? And so because of that, right, that will clarify the situation. Because if they say that it was already paid off, then the deal's done, we know it's a good, it's a valid simpon. On the other hand, if they say it was anticipation of the payoff, then we don't have any evidence against that it was paid off, and therefore it's in the hands of the Malveh. The hands of the Malveh means that it's an invalid, or he can make a claim that he pre-wrote it, and therefore he can't say parati because of it being found amongst the Malveh, unless it's found in the discard pile, like we saw before. Right now, Tashma. Simpon sheish lo eidim kasher. It's simpon that has eidim on it is kasher. So my eidim, what is eidim over here? Right? So the Gemara says eidim kiyum. That's the eidim that are mikayim, the case over here. How can I mean mistaba? That makes sense. Midiktani seifa. Second half of this, right, so it says she'ina lav eidim pasul. It doesn't have eidim on it, it's pasul. My ina lav eidim. What does it mean there's no eidim over here? If you say that it has no eidim at all, what do you have to tell me that it's pasul? I mean, that you have a shofar without any eidim here, what does it mean? Alav eidim kiyum. So it must be that one document has eidim kiyum on it, right? That they have eidim signed on it, plus they've been mekayemet. They validated the signatures of these eidim. Right, so then, right, the equivalent of validated the shtar already. On the other hand, if there is no eidim on it, what does that mean? There's no eidim on it. It means that there are eidims on it, but we haven't validated the eidim. In that case, it's pasul. So until the signatures of the eidim are validated, then we don't say that it is a kasher simpon. So the Gemara says gufa. So our case that we just discussed before is simpon sheish alav eidim yitkayem b'chotamav. Ein alav eidim. Right. So if there are no eidim there, b'yotzei mitachat shlish, and it comes out of a third party, osh yotzei la'achar chitum shtarot kasher. Or if it's written right after the signing of the shtar, then it's kasher. Alright, so now, simple sheyesh alav eidim, that's the case. What does it mean that sheyesh alav eidim here? Itkayem b'chotamav. Again, we have to validate the chotamav here. And again, itkayem b'chotamav, we said before, it's not simply just validating the witnesses, but also asking the witnesses what had transpired over here. Now, if there are no eidim on it, so again, here it sounds like there was no kiyum of the eidim, but who's holding the receipt? The receipt is by a third party. Now, the fact that the receipt is with a third party over here, we believe, why is the shovar, why is the receipt by a third party? The only reason for the receipt to be by a third party is because the malveh gave it to him. If the Malva already gave it to the third party, it means what? That the payment came out. That the payment was made. If the payment was never made, the Malva would never let the receipt go from under his hand. The fact that it's now found to the third party, who would be the only person to give the receipt to a third party? The Malva. The fact that he gave it over to him is indication that it was already paid. Or at the bottom of the shtar, there's a shtar, at the bottom there's the signatures, right after the signatures there's a receipt written at the bottom of the shtar. Again, we automatically assume that that shobar is a good shobar. Why? Because if it was not a good receipt, why would the Malva allow someone to ruin his shtar, his document? He would never let anybody write anything on his shtar, right? Because then it would invalidate or it would compromise his ability to collect the shtar anymore. So the fact that it's written there would have only been done with the permission of the Malva. The fact that he did do that means the indication that it was paid off. Yotzei mitachas shlish. Why? The hahem nei Malva the shlish. Because why is it in the hands of this third party? Because the Malva believed or trusted this person to say that it was paid off. So if he has it, then the receipt is indicative that there was a payment here.
Now you can explain Neman in one of two ways here. It means that the mere fact that a Neman, someone who has a relationship with the Malveh, is showing up and showing us the Shovar, indicates that it's a valid Shovar. It's not Stam that this guy found it or ended up in his hands, but that must have been with intent that the Malveh gave it to this individual, and that what gives validation to the Shovar. The other possibility, which I think Shaul suggested also, is that it looks like a modern-day escrow account, which is that the Malveh handed over to the Shovar, to the Shlish, to this Neman, saying that only give it to the debtor once you've collected the money. But because he did that, that means that he's entrusted the Shlish, his Neman, meaning that he gave him Nemanut. So if that this Shlish comes and says it was paid off, then the Malva doesn't have the ability to undermine or to contradict the statement of the Shlish, because that's exactly what he did. He created him as a Neman, as a Shlish, as an escrow account where the exchange will happen and that person will be believed.
If it wasn't paid off, the Malva would never let someone ruin his shtar over here. Okay, so stuff over here. Again, the idea of simpon is that when the Malva is holding the simpon, at least according to by Yerimi Baba Marav, that's not indicative of the fact that the document was paid off. The only time it's evidence of the fact that the document was paid off is it's found in the discard pile. Again, according to Rashi, that means that the shovar itself is in the discard, the simpon itself is in the discard pile. According to the other mepharshim, that the shtar itself is in the discount as a discard pile plus the shovar together make it that way. Or in a case where we have edim signed on it, when we have kotamah, when there's edim that we validate on it, then it's also kosher shtar. Now again, when edim validated, we said that's only when it's validated itkayim b'kotamah. Not simply that they validated, but in addition to validating it, they also tell us what the circumstances of when they signed it were. If they tell us that it was signed after payment, then we know it was paid. If they say it was signed in anticipation, then again, we have no evidence that the simpon is in effect or in force. And the edim haven't added any information to us that we didn't have before. Okay, we'll stop over here.